views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing
cake. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio. Welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from LA. If you'd like to get in on the conversation at any time, give us a call, 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056 is the call-in number. Would love to hear from you for today. Today is January the 7th. Of 2019. It is a Monday, and we have a live show for you today. We have Pastor Keith here in studio. So anytime you'd like to get in on the conversation, don't hesitate to give us a call. Hey, everyone, we need to support this network, and we need to support it financially so that this network can stay on air. If you would like to support the network, please go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, hit the donation prompt that's there on the website, and give some of your financial energy so this network can stay on air. It's so important. You know, instead of just consuming the fruit, we have to feed the roots of Black Talk Radio Network. So please definitely do that and give some financial energy. All donations are greatly appreciated. You can also support the network by being a member of a social media platform known as BTR Community. BTR Community is a social media platform that you can engage in all of your social media activities without being as adversely affected. You could do that there. They won't sell your identity. It's the only place that I post. So join BTR Community, www.btrcommunity.com. And that will give you access to a social media platform that will be very, very it's just a better way, more holistic way for you to engage in actually, having social media relations. So it's the only place that I do it. So definitely do that. Okay. And that will support the network for only $24 a year is what that will be, $24 a year for that overall engagement in that membership. And that supports the network as well. Okay. So we're going to get into today's show. One second, let me just pull this up. But this weather's strange. Some days it's cold, some days it's hot. But hey, we'll take it. I hate the cold and when the heat. Well, and we're in winter now, so whenever I get days above 65, 60, I'm happy. But I just said that to kill a little time waiting for my computer to, as you may have heard, you heard me drop something, fell right on the computer. So, all right. So let me get into what's in the news for today's show. Today's show for January the 7th is going to People's insensible and ahistorical path will be a burn center. Will be a burn center. Ooh, messed that up. Let me fix that. That didn't edit post. That didn't come out right. Oops. There we go. Had to fix it. Okay, so that's today's show. We're going to get into it. We didn't get into Financial Friday on Friday. I was just entirely too busy to be able to get on air and do a show. Had to take care of some immediate business things. Those things happen. But we're going to start from last Friday. There's an article I posted, and it says FDIC chair says no concerns about U.S. bank health and market term amidst market turmoil. That's the third time that someone revolving around the overall economic stability of the everyday person here in the U.S. has come out. Oh, no worries, no problems. That means there's major problems. Remember on December the 24th, the secretary, the celebrity figurehead secretary of Treasury, Mnuchin, had a call with the six top banks in the U.S. to make sure that they had the liquidity to deal with market turmoil. Whenever that happens, there's problems. Major problems. The next one was the OCC. The OCC came out and said that the banks were, a couple of days later, OCC came out and said that the banks were well positioned for adverse markets. Well positioned, the OCC said that they were positioned for adverse marketing. The OCC is the Office of Controllers of Currency for the U.S. Says U.S. banks were well positioned for adverse market conditions. Problem number two. Then last week on Thursday, the FDIC chairman said that there was no concern about the U.S. bank's health amidst market turmoil. Tells you everything. They're not ready. They're not ready. Well, they're ready for themselves, and they're ready for their overall who they represent. But what's not going to be ready is the everyday person here for this whole engagement. And that's going to be a major problem. So check out that article that we posted on Friday. Now for today, the first article that I posted for today is going to be a YouTube video from RT, and we're going to play it a little bit later. Very significant. It's about 3 minutes long, I think it is. It's not long at all. China is ready to use military force to force Taiwan into reunification. Uh-oh. It's going to happen. And that is going to be severe, and here we go. So next article I got from move this down. Move this down. This one goes from Wall Street Journal. U.S. ship sails near disputed South China Sea islands in challenge to Beijing. That whole thing is happening while they're going on with the overall trade talks as well. Significant. This South Sea of China is really ramping up. Next article comes from South China Morning Post. President Xi Jinping of China says, be ready for battle, hardship, crisis. President Xi Jinping tells the Chinese army. And then Keith also sent me an article from Epoch Times where a Chinese leader tells armed forces to be ready for war. So all is coming to head here. Next article got from Reuters. U.S. banks will be well positioned for adverse markets, says the OCC. I'm trying to cover that. We'll come to that as well today. Next article from RT International. Russia's top list of Germany's biggest fears puts U.S. is only 1 point behind. So check out that
Say
article.
Say that again.
It says, this is from RT International. Russia tops list of Germany's biggest fear. So they say that Germany is saying that Russia is their biggest fear.
Okay.
But the U.S. is only 1 point behind.
I need you to elaborate on that. And the reason being is because doesn't Germany and Russia have a coalition?
Yes. They're definitely going. And I think that that's just a
front.
A front. Yeah. Vladimir Putin speaks perfect German. When he speaks to Angela Merkel, he doesn't speak to her in any other language but German. They this whole thing is Germany is going to align with Russia in this coming war, and France is going to follow as well. That's why when they started talking about having a coalition for Syria, who's the first people that Russia invited? Germany. So Russia tops the list of Germany's biggest fears, but the U.S. is only 1 point behind. When they say 1 point behind, I read that as the U.S. is number one. And you've really been seeing that in how the finance minister, Merkel, and the rest of the German establishment, what their overall regards with the U.S. is. They're no longer an ally. So check out that article. Next article, major, major, major article. Major article, and it really tells for me it's significant about this war that's going to be kicking off. Watch USS Fort Henry claim to advance to the Black Sea. So they are sending the USS Fort McHenry to the Black Sea. And they're going to be going through the Bosphorus in Turkey to get there. Now, the USS Fort McHenry, you have to know what this ship is, its overall job is. It has a MAU with it, a Marine Expeditionary Unit. This is your first, this is what you use to attack a country or make land grounding with U.S. troops, with U.S. Marines.
Without having to file for...
Yep.
Proclaim a proclamation of war.
Yep. And this is significant that this overall ship is going there. And these are usually, and I think Keith, in between your video games, I think Keith is doing really well on his video game because he's really into it. It's got head and hand movement all coordinated together. This is a real signal that usually when the U.S. uses MEU, they usually try to invade somewhere. I wouldn't be surprised if this would be a indication of a attack within the overall, either going into the Ukraine to, or assisting the Ukraine with Crimea. That is going to be a, because that's what you would use as a landing force, and then the rest of the augmentation of the Navy and Air Force and the Army would come after the overall Marines make landing. So this is not good at all. Military intelligence says the U.S. Sixth Fleet Commander announced that the U.S. announced that the American landing ship has been sent to the Black Sea region to enhance security and to reaffirm U.S. commitment to strong relationships with NATO allies. What NATO ally are they talking about? The Ukraine. The Ukraine. And as soon as the Ukraine gets more established within NATO, that's when Russia is going to invade. Major, major problems. They're all brewing. Need to know. So check out that article. Next article from Press TV. Trump claims Iran is seeking talks. Iran says that's false dreams. Iran has categorically dismissed Trump's new claim that Tehran is after talks with Washington, says the U.S. president has only given voice to his false and unattainable dreams. Check out that article. Next article from Acting Man, circling the drain. Yeah, it really is. And that is the economy it is. Check out that article. Next article from Press TV, national security threats. U.S. lists China, Russia, and Iran as their national security threats. Check out that article. Next article, this one comes from Bloomberg. Sears. Let me hit this. So Sears says to prepare for possible liquidation of our stores. Let me see, 1 second. Let me let this come up real quick. excuse me, I had a, okay, Sears prepares for possible liquidation as their overall ESL bid fails. So Sears is gone, pretty much. So this was significant. Sears Holding Group is preparing for the potential that this year will be its last. The store retailer started laying groundwork for liquidation after Chairman ELM Eddie bid to buy several hundred stores out of bankruptcy, fell short of banker's qualifications, people with knowledge of the matter said. So Sears is going to be going completely kaput. So that basically means go get some of the stuff that's there for the few Sears stores that's been around. So very significant. I think the economy is going to be following that one as well. So check out that. Next article from CNBC. Inflation is under control, says Fed chair, celebrity figurehead Fed chairman Powell. Oh, boy.
Inflation is under control.
That's so speculative, and it means nothing. Under control for who? For what? And everything else. Inflation is rampant, and it's going to be far, far, far worse, and we're going to take a look at that some in today's show. Okay, next article from CBC. I see storm clouds building. IMF warns of looming financial crisis. This was Christine Lagarde talking about that, but the one that was really significant is that there was the IMF member that said that the world is woefully unprepared for the next financial crisis that will happen in the world.
Who said that?
One of the main individuals at the IMF said that the world is woefully unprepared for the next financial crisis. He even said, he told Financial Times, I'm going to get the article from Financial Times and then post it. He said in the article, they're even less prepared than they were in 2008. The world is even less prepared for it. So it is definitely there. All of the major warning signings are there. So we're going to take a look at two things in today's show. We want to take a look at, we're going to do a part of Financial Friday since we didn't have it. And then we'll also want to take a look at what's going on in the South Sea of China and also with the Korean Peninsula and might as well say the Chinese Taiwan reunification by force. That's going to definitely happen. So that's what's in the news, and we're going to get into today's show at any time. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056 is the call-in number. I want to start the first part of this show. Bear with me, you all. Having a little issues here. Okay, cool. Got to play this for you all. One sec, let me find it. Okay, so got to go here. Want to play something for you from RT International about what's going on with China and Taiwan. And it's the issue that you need to be made well aware of, and it's going to further implode to what we've been saying is going to be happening and why we all need to be prepared. So just want to get you up to date on this, and then we'll actually talk about it. Man, Keith, I got a massive headache today.
That ain't good.
No, that's not good. That's not good. And so, but hey, no problem. We still got to deal with it. Man, how come it's not getting what I want? So we're going to play this video real quick. Let me just set it up so I can send it to Scotty. I want you to hear firsthand just some of the reporting and hear what is all being said, because you definitely need to know. And this is stuff is now we're getting to the point where people are saying, yes, crisis, financial collapse. And you're starting to hear the overall war where they're actually talking straight out war. And when this happens, that means that your overall means and measures to prepare, your window to prepare is really running short. So before, I like the old days, Keith, when it just, you know, you had to speculate that this was, or you had to say, hey, this is going to happen, that, you know, it wasn't as blatant as it is now, because most people won't do things until it's blatant, and most won't do anything until it actually happens and is way too late. But I like the old days where you could say, hey, this stuff is coming. No, it's really here now, and there isn't anyone that can refute this anymore. I like it when people could refute it and say, nah, that's not, man. Those were the easy days. That was what you wanted to stay in, but that's not the case now. So I'm going to post this. I want you to hear this about what's going on with Taiwan and China. So I put it inside of the chat. Scotty, whenever you get a chance, if you can, if you would play that. Now, let me see if Scotty's there. If Scotty won't be able to play it, I will be able to play it. Gary, okay, Scotty, play it. So listen to this RT really quickly about how close everything really is to imploding into war, and all the overall actors are positioned just for it.
And we start today in Asia. China is flexing its military power once again. Chinese President Xi Jinping said he's ready to use military force to reunite Taiwan if need be. RT's Sarah Montes de Oca joins me. Sarah, what is the latest?
Well, Steve, it looks like a more confident China is threatening to use military force in Taiwan while urging the Taiwanese to accept reunification with China.
We will not rule out the use of force and will reserve all options of necessary measures.
These threats come as Washington and Beijing remain intense trade talks. Experts are warning that the increase of military presence from both sides in the South China Sea could spark a greater conflict than just trade tariffs between the two superpowers. It looks like both countries are doing just that. The Pentagon is now urging America's Pacific Rim allies to also increase their military presence in the South China Sea to confront China. And Beijing revealed that its top military priority for 2019 includes strengthening training and preparing for war. The Pentagon's Assistant Secretary of Defense for Asian and the Pacific Affairs said that other U.S. allies, including Britain, France, and Canada, have already boosted their military presence in the South China Sea. Most recently, in late December, Chinese Admiral Luo Yuan said that his country's military is capable of sinking 2 American aircraft carriers and killing 10,000 American sailors. Now, the admiral said that what the U.S. fears most is casualties. We'll see how frightened America is. Let's not forget that back in October, Lieutenant General Ben Hodges, the just-retired commander of the U.S. Army in Europe, suggested that the conflict between the superpowers would come soon. In a statement, he said, "I think in 15 years, it's not inevitable, but it is a very strong likelihood that we will be at war with China." And Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan told top Pentagon officials to remain focused on ongoing operations, but to remember, China, China, China. Now, this was Shanahan's first meeting after taking over the former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. So despite the leadership change at the Pentagon, it seems like the U.S. will be sticking to the same strategy, which was written by Mattis and describes China as predatory and a hostile power. Now, the plan states that long-term strategic competitions with China and Russia are the principal priorities for the department and require both increased and sustained investment. Steve, while at this moment it's still largely rhetoric, the prospect of these two superpowers at war is an outcome that both militaries appear to actively be preparing for.
Well, that would be a very serious development, obviously. But the United States took some action today, thankfully not militarily, where they issued a warning to American citizens.
That's right. So the U.S. State Department actually issued a level 2 warning for those Americans traveling to China. To be cautious, to proceed with increased caution. This because Chinese authorities are capable of preventing them from returning to U.S. citizens, sometimes without cause and sometimes for years. So there is a level 2 warning now.
A warning to be taken seriously. Thank you, Sarah. For more, we're joined by our guest, Saurabh Gupta, Senior Asia-Pacific International Relations Policy Specialist at the Institute for China-America Studies. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, so how serious is this latest round of rhetoric from China regarding its claim on Taiwan and the threat of force? Our new acting Secretary of Defense has reportedly told leaders at the Pentagon, as Sarah mentioned, focus on China, China, China. Is he right?
Well, the national defense strategy and the national security strategy did focus very significantly on China and Russia. So, and Secretary Mattis too had been very focused, of course, on China, even though he maintained a policy of engaging China in military to military dialogue. So, as long as the two countries continue to maintain their dialogue schedule, I wouldn't be too concerned. Even though the ratcheting up of the rhetoric does leave some scope for apprehension on all sides, frankly. All right.
So last month, a Chinese admiral threatened to sink U.S. aircraft carriers that were operating in the East and South China Seas and presumably the Taiwan Strait. A great op-ed today in TheHill.com by Joseph Bosco. He says that as China closes the military gap with the United States, that their threats get bolder. So could these threats be getting closer to actually becoming a reality at the same time?
Not exactly. I know there are very serious threats, and we must get ready to face up to the next 10, 15, perhaps next two or three decades of very serious military and maritime competition in the Asia-Pacific, particularly in the Western Pacific. The Chinese are determined to create an anti-access, anti-denial bubble along their periphery. Their periphery means the first island chain, the islands of Japan, Philippines, and Taiwan, and thereafter push that bubble, anti-access bubble, even further out towards the middle of the Western Pacific. This competition will go on for the next 10, 15 years. We might have some crises, contingencies, but I think we must settle in for the long term of this sort of competition, and it doesn't necessarily have to get out of hand and create a hot kinetic conflict.
Well, sir, let me ask you, what exactly is U.S. policy? Is it unambiguous defense of Taiwan? Or, would it depend on the circumstances, as former Assistant Defense Secretary Joseph Nye said during the missile crisis with China back in 1995?
It will depend on the circumstances. That's just the way it is. The way the Taiwan Relations Act is written, which is seen as the basis for U.S. action to come to the defense of Taiwan, has a fair degree of ambiguity. It is not like your security treaties that are there with Japan and with other countries. And so there is a degree of ambiguity. But can I just go back to one point earlier?
Yeah, sure,
this is
sure,
with regard
sure.
to President Xi's speech. I know it just came out of the blue for most people on January 1st, suddenly such strong words against Taiwan. But let me provide a little bit of a context out here. You know, this speech was made on the 40th anniversary of the speech by the National People's Congress Standing Committee to compatriots in Taiwan. That speech happened at the time of normalization of relations with the U.S., U.S.-China relations, and Taiwan was still remained a somewhat an unresolved affair at that point of time. That speech 40 years back was seen as a harbinger of the two sides, that is China and Taiwan, moving away from military confrontation and lobbing military insults at each other to opening the path to peaceful reunification.
Right.
Now, President Xi provided that context needs to be understood, because President Xi stuck to that same peaceful reunification theme, although he did put it a little bit on steroids. So we must understand that broader context when
we
discuss this.
I do appreciate you clarifying that and bringing that up. Saurabh Gupta, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hey, YouTube. Thanks for checking out.
Okay, so I wanted everyone to hear that, because what's really happening is you're talking about how the new economy is going to be governed and who is going to be the deciding factors in that new economy. And it will be the BRIC nations and not the U.S. You know, it's the South Sea of China, so the U.S. really has no real reason to be there at all. But it is going to, there is definitely going to be a military confrontation between the U.S. and China and Russia in an all-out war, because everything is being pushed in position throughout the world for that to happen. At Djibouti, in different parts of the continent, the overall assets of war have been strategically placed in Africa. Also, the Middle East, as you all know, continues to deteriorate. And so this is not going to stop at all. It's only going to continue to unfold. And when these guys go on and they give the reporting, they always try to give the reporting from a side of, this is really, 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 really bad. And it's going to move into all out war that the U.S. is, in my opinion, is definitely going to lose, because the South Sea of China is critical for the global economy. $5 or $7 trillion worth of goods that go through there. Whoever controls that controls the global economy. And that's where the play that China is making, and this is only going to expand. So that overall engagement, think of the Korean Peninsula, China with Taiwan, and China will take Taiwan back. The U.S. will try to maintain its overall global hegemony by force, which will be challenged and lost. China doesn't need to have, in its military, it doesn't need to have what the U.S. has. When they said that they can sink aircraft carriers, they weren't bluffing. They were real. And some people
say they're going to be forced to operate out of Guam.
Well, I think they'll neutralize Guam completely.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll be operating out of Japan.
Japan said.
And
they say that Japan was moving the United States out of there if Russia gave them those two territories.
And somewhat, all of these deals are being made. So all of this is going to be a displacement for the U.S. completely. So if China's saying that they could sink aircraft carriers, means that they've shown the ability to do that, and it's definitely can be done, and they really will. And that's why the U.S. Navy is really outdated. We actually did some of those shows, and we'll do others to show that. So we're talking about a real displacement. Unfortunately, young people's lives are going to be destroyed, and it's going to be a part of this world war. Is going to be a depopulation program for sure. And it's just, disappointing that it's going to be used this way, but it is definitely going to be used. It is not this type of this. What's going on is not being used for the overall trade negotiations. When you look at historically, you have the overall events to go to major global war. It goes this way. First is a currency war that turns into a trade war that turns into a shooting war. They've been in the currency war for so long. Now they're at the height of the trade war. When countries stop trading with one another, that's when they start shooting at each other. And so that's what's going to definitely happen, and that path is not going to be altered. And the reason why, definitely you need to be prepared. It's nothing, your optimism, my optimism about this whole thing, and in my opinion about this optimism about the whole thing, is be optimistic that right now it hasn't happened as of yet that to affect you, but it will. And so the optimism that I have about it is to prepare for it until it does happen, to continue to prepare for what is inevitably going to happen. So we won't escape this one at all. And it's going to be one you can't escape. And if you look at the dynamics of this all, this is just another straight run into this situation. It gives cause, it's evidence, it substantiates and validates the overall war paradigm by these things that are happening. But the truth of the matter is that it will be going into a war. When can it go into a war? It could go into it in the next 20 minutes, the next hour. It's that significant. You got look at what's going on in the Middle East. You look at what's going on in Eurasia, in Europe, and in the peninsulas, Korean in Korean Peninsula and in the South Sea of China, then Venezuela, then in also in you know, in this hemisphere, in Central America. So it's definitely here where we need to be aware of it and taking this seriously and just doing all that you can do, because that is going to be very important, what you do now going forward. So this is why we have this show and what is very, very important. So I just wanted you to hear that significance. Now, of that significance, 1 second. In that significance, the U.S. is now continuing to challenge the South Sea of China waterways militarily. And just want to pull this one article up. Excuse me, 1 second. This darn thing is taking this time. 1 sec. But while it's doing that, in the South Sea of China, there's actively, the U.S. continues to have what they call freedom of navigation moves into the South Sea of China, which China is going to now meet those overall navigation challenges with force. So when I look at the military sides of things now starting to come into clash before when they weren't, they are now, that's going to give a rise to the potential for things to completely go wrong. Look at the instability that's happening. You know, Mattis was fired, all these other people quit. They want to, all of this is a part of the overall war paradigm in my economic war and the overall hot confrontation. So
you just had that other dude just stepped down a couple of days ago too. Sweeney.
Who was that? I actually was off the out of the news cycle, Keith. I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, he just stepped down a couple of days ago. He was the Rear Admiral. What office was he? And I think he was the guy that was right behind Kelly.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, just went to the last few days.
But I didn't know that. Well, you know, the one admiral killed himself.
Two.
From the Third Fleet. What?
Well, what do you need these generals for if they don't have no equipment that's operatable anyway?
Yeah. Not good. I didn't know that, Keith.
But I came across a very interesting take the other day. And I guess we've kind of talked about it on a offshore type of way. But what this article said, I thought was kind of interesting. Basically, it said, let me see if I can find it real fast. Basically, what it said is the Trump family has been bought and sold to destroy the United States from the inside by Russia. I've never seen it, heard it expressed in quite those terms. But really, if you think about that, that will warrant some discussion.
Or how feasible is that? Of course, very.
It's very feasible. Because my thing with Trump is, and I think we brought this up the other day, was that you and I was having a discussion with, that was you, when I said that the United States hasn't responded to a United Nations inquiry or investigation for violation of human rights. Was that you?
No, that wasn't me.
Okay. So they haven't responded they haven't responded to an investigation by the United Nations for violations of humanitarian rights, et cetera, since I believe of March of last year.
The U.S.
The U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So let's think about that one second, Dave. The United Nations have been trying to investigate the United States for almost a year, and the United States have been denying all those investigations.
And then they wanted to pull out of that overall.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So here's my thing. The implications of that are huge. It's scary, actually. But the implications of that are huge. But here's my question, Dave. Have you heard or did you have any knowledge of that?
No.
No. If we didn't hear nothing about that that's been going on for a year on that level, what else is going on that we haven't heard nothing about?
It seems like the rest of the world, and I've always said the purge, the rest of the world is purging the U.S. From the position of having the global hegemony from economics, political, and militarily. And I'm definitely not surprised that they're going to use the UN as a part of that. And how do you start with that? Exactly what you just said. You start the overall investigations, because what are the investigations going to, what do you use investigations for? To indict.
Sure.
And that's exactly what's going, that's exactly what's happening. And so, yeah, Keith, didn't hear much about it. And you're not going to hear much about it until the appropriate time. As all of these events, as once the shooting war starts, this is where you're going to see the UN, you're going to come out and say, hey, the UN is going to say, we found cause and reason to charge the U.S. not only with that, but many other things. And this is all going to be a part of the overall purging of the U.S. It's a significant article from... that you should read is the U.S. Ship sails near disputed South China Sea islands in challenge to Beijing. And as the U.S. McCampbell patrols was met to challenge excessive maritime claims by Beijing, U.S. Navy said. A U.S. guided missile destroyer patrolled near the disputed partial islands in the South Sea of China on Monday, challenging Beijing's maritime claim there, U.S. military officials said. The USS McCain conducted what the military calls a freedom of navigation operation in the partial island chain, sailed within 12 nautical miles of three islands. Tree, Lincoln, and Wood, according to the Navy officials. So, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, Keith. So all of this is coming around. Keith just showed me an article about, and you think about how the overall Trump family implication in trying to basically, so they're saying, being an agent for Russia. Now, let's just think about it for a minute. Look at Trump's ties to Russia for years, not the past 2 years. Since being a celebrity figurehead president, not the past 5 years. How about going back 25 years and 30 years?
Now, let's not go back that far.
No,
let's go more recent. And I want you to elaborate when you say Trump's ties to Russia.
Well, I mean, those ties are definitely there.
What ties?
Business ties.
What kind of business ties?
All kinds of financial business ties. And the thing about it is that it's also tied to what's commonly referred to as the Russian mafia.
Exactly. And my thing is, and what I'm trying to pull out of you, is you keep saying ties. But if you look at it, Trump would have slipped off to oblivion, completely broke, without Russia.
Right.
Completely and totally is his finance completely owed to Russia.
Well, that's the perfect, you know, so they actually, what was significant was, what was the deal for you to sell yourself out to in your case, right? At the appropriate time, Russia aided Trump for free. No, of course not. If they're going to aid the overall Trump enterprise, They're doing it for what? It's very specific reason.
Absolutely.
They're going to want a return on their what? Investment.
Absolutely.
And now you're starting to see it.
And their investment, it was huge. And it's huge. We're not talking about, Dave, an investment of several millions of dollars.
Yeah.
We're not talking about that. You're approaching billions of dollars. So the thing is, and I said about the fact that we didn't know.
I think Scotty wants to chime in too. Go ahead, Scotty.
This Rob out of Atlanta. I had a quick question, man.
Hey, Rob, I'm going to need you to call me after the show as well. I got a question for you, very important. So give me a call after the show as well. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, so I know you always say that, you know, China has one of those countries that never invaded another country. Would this be one of those times where a first instance of, you know, China invading somebody?
Did I say that again, Rob?
You always used to say that China had never really invaded another country.
Yeah.
And this go around, according to what, you know, what they're saying, is it possible this would be a first invasion by China? By China?
No, I wouldn't even consider this being an invasion by China, because China is always, just like Hong Kong, they allow Taiwan because they is, you know, it's, Taiwan has always been territorially China's. So I wouldn't consider that an invasion by China at all, because Taiwan has always been China's, but they allowed them to establish their own way of doing business like they did with Hong Kong. So now we're just to the point where it's become militarily strategically important for Taiwan to actually, you know, you need to return to where you came from, because now you've been infiltrated by an aggressor that will be using their overall military might against the U.S. So that's why it's not, in my opinion, is nowhere near an invasion. It's kind of like the U.S. in Puerto Rico, to give an example. But even stronger. Yeah, or maybe even Hawaii. Well, no, not even that, because, you know, Taiwan was always a part of China. You know, Hawaii hasn't always been a part of the U.S., nor has Puerto Rico.
And lots of people in Hawaii don't want to be part of the United States. They just voted a year or so ago to leave the United States. But, of course, the United States is not going to honor that vote.
Yeah, and you're starting to see, you know, starting to see that as well. You know, like I said, Texas has already had a couple of times, and we had a small blur where the Republican Party was one of the things on the agenda. The number two thing on the agenda at the last Republican convention in Dallas, because Keith was there, he told me he's a big Republican, was the number two thing was secession from the U.S., and they kept that under wraps big time. They just mentioned it. Yeah, we do it all the time. But
who was that?
The Republican Party. The
difference between Hawaii and Texas, though, is Texas had voted to join the Union when it was just a territory of colonizers. They voted to join the United States. Hawaii was forced by the barrel of a gun to cede their sovereignty by kidnapping their queen. And the only reason she signed the papers is because she didn't want to see any more Hawaiians get killed. And she thought wrongly that the rest of the world, known as the United Nations, I think the United Nations was around during the time, but Hawaii had allies and thought that their allies were going to stand up for their sovereignty, and it never happened.
Yep. So it's differently. So, you know, you really could say that Hawaii was kidnapped.
Yeah, she was. The queen was kidnapped for sure. But this was what my question was. It was about Trump. But, you know, you're right. That's like China invading itself. They just allowed them people on that island to have autonomy. And what did those people do with that autonomy but cozy up to the enemies of China? You know? So yeah, that's Chinese territory that they've always claimed. What I was going to ask about Trump is, what was Keith reading from? Because I've seen no evidence. I've heard a lot of talk, especially coming from mainstream media, about Donald Trump is in the pocket of Putin or with the Russians. What are y'all reading that because Donald Trump has not even shared his tax return. His finances is pretty much shrouded in mystery, and nobody knows except for the accountants. He has admitted, and I think it shows that he is financially tied to Saudi Arabia, why he's looking over the fact that this guy MBS had this journalist killed, because he has bragged about, you know, them renting out entire floors from his hotels and whatnot. But Trump is an international businessman. He has Trump Towers selling his name to golf courses and hotels all around the world, including Russia. So I don't see how his personal finances is specifically dependent upon Russians. Now, he might owe some Russian businessmen some money, but I bet he owe a lot of people some money, because that's just how that business works. You get in a lot of debt and things of that nature and hope to turn a profit. So I'm not aware of any evidence that explicitly shows that Russia, the government, has financial hooks in him, no more than Saudi Arabia has financial hooks in him with deals and you know, currently, you know, using his properties.
Yeah, one of the things, remember, Russia doesn't really have private investment in Russia. Everyone in Russia, when their business people have business dealings like Gazprom or anything else, that's all by the government as well.
So ain't that really the same with the United States? When if we want to talk about a Russia involved deal, uranium won. Didn't they have to go before the U.S. Government body in order for them to approve the sale that was going to get at Russian company? You know, that was done during the Obama administration. Here's the thing. I was reading this the other day because I was just thinking about this. When I don't know if many people remember, Barack Obama gave a long speech in Russia one time. This was shortly after he got the Nobel Peace Prize. He gave a speech in Russia, and he's given more than one. And he was being criticized. Republicans were being criticized at that time by Democrats for unnecessarily antagonizing Putin and Russia and putting the U.S. national security at risk by unneedlessly antagonizing one of the other superpowers in the world. That's what the Democrats were saying. They saying something different now. Now it's them who's unneedlessly antagonizing, you know, Russia and what have you. So, you know, I'm very skeptical of anything I hear from mainstream media about Russia and Donald Trump, because Russia's hosted a number of U.S. representatives and presidents.
Yeah, they have. And that's how you really do it, to cover your tracks. But there's been well-documented ties to where Trump has had dealings with and taking financial deals with the Russians. You know, just in Florida, huge deals.
Is that were that they the illegal Russians, deals? Were they illegal? Did he break the law?
No. These were legal deals that were actually on the books. But here's what happens with some of those individuals that they actually had business dealings with, were tied directly to the strong Russian mafia, which is there has a real, real strong presence in real estate. Guess where? In London. So this whole cabal of financing that they have is very, very, very strong and very insulated inside the financial network. So there's no doubt that Trump has been actually on the end.
This is Pop Prevo on the radiator. I had to mute Rob out.
So the overall, how this, I don't know where everyone left. Let me give you just, in Cyprus, when the Cyprus banking collapse happened, the Cyprus government allowed Russian investors to withdraw all of their money out of Cyprus before it collapsed. And then they were able to get out of Dodge and leave. And inside of Britain, Russia has a very, very, very strong real estate presence in Britain. And westward, all of that overall real estate investment is commonly referred to as known as the dark money of the Russian mafia. And the ties of the Russian mafia is really strong because of the KGB. Now, guess who was actually one of the significant figureheads of the KGB? It's Vladimir Putin. And Trump has had a lot of business dealings with Russian oligarchs that are tied to the dark money of the overall Russian mafia, which is also entailed the Russian KGB in Florida, where these are huge deals. So Donald Trump always has had, and it's not anything as of new, but Donald Trump has always had ties, real estate investment, because that's what the Russian mafia likes to use in their overall transactions. They love to use real estate as a part of that overall thing. So
let me give an example before you cut that off. So one of those properties that transactions that you're talking about was a place in Florida, and I think that Trump went ahead and they bought this property for like a million or two.
I'm a person.
Turned right around and bought it from Trump for like 25, 30 million. They never used it. They never cared about it. The property never went, but all of a sudden they just gave him this $30 million. So it shows laundering. The other thing is they show where when he was going broke and he had nowhere to go because nobody wanted to loan him any money. Because like Scotty was talking about, what had happened was, for whatever reason, the United States have lost their minds and they let Trump billions of dollars. And what had happened was, that's when, you remember everything that he touched went bankrupt. And what they did was they all came together and they said, look, because of the amount of money, we can't just let that go. So at that point in time, they took Trump, they said, we're going to pay you this amount of money just to use your name. But he was bankrupt and everything else. Russia came in and gave him all those billions of dollars to reestablish himself and all these things. So, yeah, again, not only is it just real estate, but if you look at what Russia invested in Trump with and for, it was nothing. It didn't make any sense. Why are you giving Trump all this money when he's not giving you any returns? Now, it would be one thing if you had a business plan and you were making money back, and that wasn't the case. They're just giving them this money.
Yeah, and it has been there, been happening because one of the things is that the Russians are very asymmetrical in everything that they do, and it's really how they operate. And remember also, Trump was trying to build a hotel in Moscow for 30 years, and he laid true to that in 1987 when he visited Moscow. What's the book that Trump wrote? Is there a play on Art of War?
The Art of the Deal.
Art of the Deal. He admits his overall Russian engagement in Moscow at that time. You can't get into Moscow in 1987 without first going where? To the KGB. You can't do it. You couldn't do it. So those overall ties that Trump has been historical ties that now he's saying, no, I have no ties. You can't. But no, it's 1987. I remember, you know, this dude was in that because I grew up on the East Coast. So what Donald Trump did, I kind of always was familiar with. And I was like, wow, this dude is dealing with Moscow in 1987. That's nothing more than because at that time in 87, I actually had a very sensitive job with the military, a highly sensitive job with the military. And that was when the KGB was really, really still strong, and they were redefining themselves as to how they were going to play out the next 200 years. And guess what at that time was happening? Donald Trump becomes very interested in establishing footholds in Moscow. Can't do it without that. And I think what happened, they told him to tone that down, move, because we got other plans. So Trump's Russian ties are deep. Extremely, extremely deep. And it's he admits it, but now he's going to deny it. One thing about Trump, what I loved about Trump is he said this. I remember when he hired Mattis. He said, well, you know, I'm hiring this great general because the last president that wasn't so great made a fatal mistake of firing him. And then now when he just recently, you know what Donald Trump says? Well, you know, Obama fired him. And so I love this dude play on words. The dude is never, ever straight. He's never, ever, ever, ever straight. And it's because it's a part of the...
You know he's telling the truth about that, though. Obama did fire him.
Yes. No. He was... Yeah, Obama did fire him. But what he was saying was that when he hired Mattis, he's saying Obama was dumb in doing firing him. So he was saying that he was wrong in firing this great general, but here it is. I'm the great new American president is going to make America great. So I'm going to hire Mattis. So then now he falls out with Mattis. He's going to say, well, you know, Obama fired him too. So yeah, it's true. But this dude is you know.
Do you know why he fired Mattis?
No, I don't know why. I don't know why he fired him.
What I ascertain is why he fired Mattis. Is because Mattis went against him on the Syria pullout. That's why Obama fired him, because Mattis wants to fight Iran. Okay, Mattis might be an Israeli Zionist agent. Not saying that he's an Israeli citizen, but he's a puppet of Mossad. Mm-hmm. So that's why Obama fired him. Because of, you know, when he was saying, I'm going to withdraw the troops from Iraq, they've always wanted, them generals always wanted them to stay in the Middle East because they're making a lot of money for the defense contractors who they hope to get a job with when they retire, making lots of money for doing nothing. But that's why Mattis got fired by Obama, because he wanted to turn it into something to where they were going to fight Iran. Now, I believe based off of evidence, not evidence, but what I've read about some things that was said, was that Mattis really pushed against him withdrawing troops from Syria. Because, again, Mattis wants to fight Iran. So Trump fired him. Now, regardless of, people could say that, oh, Putin wins if we pull out of Syria. Putin wins if we pull out of Iraq. I say let him win. You know, because Trump is absolutely right. We have no business being there. The CIA, the intelligence services that Trump said cooked the books on so-called ISIS, and that the U.S. taxpayers, he didn't say U.S. taxpayers, but he said the U.S. is spending all this money, and these people need to spend their own money and solve their own problems in their own neighborhood. Now, what's wrong with that?
I don't think anyone would say there's anything wrong with that at all. I would totally agree that the U.S. needs no military bases over the number of military bases that they have everywhere.
Right, right. Well, there's plenty of people saying something wrong with it. They're on MSNBC. They're on CNN. They're saying they're trying to catfish him. How they go, what is it called? Catfishing? No, it's something else. They're trying to gaslight him. He only doing this because he's in the pocket of Putin and Putin wants him to. And all of these things was going on before Trump even thought about running for president.
Yeah, it's that whole thing. Should they be out of there? Yeah, they should be out of there and everywhere else as well. Because it's just not the right thing to do. But Keith wanted to chime in before we... Well, wait, Keith, let's go to a commercial break. We're going to come right back to you. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call. 704-802-5056 is the call-in number. Keith, you wanted to chime in on something. Go ahead.
Mine aren't as sure, but they're kind of question marks. But the thing is, with pulling out of Syria, didn't we have a hand in toppling Syria's government?
No, tried to topple Syria's government many, 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 many times, Obama being one, but Obama got pushed back by Britain when it came to Syria. And why did Britain push Obama back in 2013 when they sent all over the military to actually blast on Syria because they said that Syria was engaged in chemical use? The reason that Britain blasted Obama and said, no, we're not going to do it, is because of the strength of the Russian oligarch inside of Britain. So it was actually also there that Obama was actually rebuffed against, because Obama kept saying that Assad must go and we need to get rid of him, even if we have to do it militarily. And so Obama had actually positioned and through that overall, and I thought it was a false flag. Remember, him and McCain were big on this ISIS thing, and that they were involved in the overall chemical attack and how it was so bad. And Obama actually said, well, what I'm going to do is this. Send the military naval armada over, be ready to attack. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to wait on and put it in Congress's court. But before it even got to Congress, Britain had made a decision. And they said, no way in the world are we going to be a part of this. And that pretty much killed everything.
Hey, Dave, really, you know, Congress never authorized, because there's, I follow a number of representatives, and there's this one out of California. I forget his name. I could probably pull it up. But he's been saying over the weekend since Trump announced the Syria decision, and this dude's a Democrat. But he was saying on Twitter, he said, good decision, basically telling Trump that's a good decision. And he doesn't like Trump. He criticizes Trump all day long on Twitter. But he said on the Syria withdrawal, he said Congress didn't authorize no boots on the ground in Syria. They absolutely, that's what makes it an illegal invasion. So being that the Russians were invited into Syria and they have legitimate business interests in Syria, they're a sovereign nation, Syria sovereign nation, and they want to do deals together. That's their business. But Congress didn't authorize putting boots on the ground, and he sent them. They always call them military advisors and sent special forces there. Right. And so we had to ask, well, who was Obama administration? And I think that Hillary Clinton was really calling the shots on foreign policy during that first term. But we had to ask, well, who were they doing this for?
Yeah.
You know, because in my review of the situation, Russia's innocent in this, man. If we talking Syria.
Well, you're right. The Hillary was calling those shots, and Russia absolutely hated that. Look at Gaddafi and everything else. that went on there. And so, yeah, because the thing was that they were actually going to have airstrikes use naval. They were going to actually have a cruise missile attack on Syria, and it was going to be a significant one. And that's when the British said nope. And then that's when Congress started to pull back as well. So yeah, I'm gonna tell you, this is a tricky web, because there is no alliance among any of those. And you know, it's difficult to say who's doing what, and then they'll change stuff up on you immediately, because this is it's really much more to this than what meets the eye. And so it's a whole lot going on.
Hey, Dave, you know that Britain was backing the Free Syrian Army, okay? They were also helping to supply them and whatnot. Now, when Trump recently said we leaving Syria, I don't know if y'all remember the mainstream media talking heads was talking about, but what about the Kurds? The Kurds going to get slaughtered and this, that, and the other. Well, they wasn't saying the Kurds was going to get slaughtered by Assad, because the Kurds are Syrians, and the Kurds was never at war with Assad. The Kurds were fighting, actually had fights, and I looked this up, actually had battles with the U.S.-backed and U.K.-backed Free Syrian Army, because the Free Syrian Army was also working with ISIS and Al-Qaeda and al-Nusra and them other Islamic extremists. And so I'm like, and so then, you know, they shut up. You don't hear that no more, because the Kurds sat down with their government. And see, people think the Kurds was trying to break away from Syria. Not those Syrian Kurds. They actually, their military wing, that's their military arm of their political party. They participated in the elections in Syria, and they pretty much had their autonomy anyway before the civil war in that region that they're in. They were pretty much, you know, self-governing, you know, but still part of the Syrian government. So now, you know, you don't hear them talking about the Kurds no more, because the Kurds and the Russians went to that border to protect them against who? Against Turkey. Because Turkey was massing on that border with the Kurds. And so this is why Ron Paul and I like, you know, following and getting information from Ron Paul. He said this is why you don't get yourself involved in foreign entanglements unless it's to do with trade. But these military entanglements. So here you got to back one ally against another ally, potentially, if the Kurds in Turkey was to have military. That's a cluster, you know what, as we said in the military.
Right, Scotty. And that exactly, because it's all, you know, because you don't, and that's a part of what so-called the overall constitutional agreement was with America, not to get into foreign relations. Don't tie yourself into that, because what's going to happen is that you're going to be used by all sides. And not only that, you're going to be used by the overall greedy hands in your own country as well. And so, yeah, it is a real, real bad situation, where this is why my overall assessment is that all of the U.S., you know, my opinion, the U.S. doesn't need an offensive military at all, at all. So, yeah, it intertwines into some real, real, real mess. And so we'll pick up a show on this, because it's a lot involved in it, so that, you know, the everyday person could make their own decisions about it. But I'm going to tell you, listen, I don't think that there's going to be any troops that pull out of Syria at all. And I actually think that there's going to actually be more troops that are going to be sent there, because this, I don't know exactly now which bomb is going to explode first. Is it going to be Israel and Iran? Is it going to be and then Syria being the backdrop for everything? Is it going to be Turkey and you know, in the U.S., is that going to you know, be the bomb that drops there? And that's just in one place. The actual military engagement of China in the U.S. in Djibouti is very, very significant. I mean, extremely significant. Is it going to be the Ukraine with Crimea and the Eastern Europe? Absolutely. That one is going to be the one that really jumps off. And then what is Turkey going to do with that because of their strait? The U.S. can't send their overall fleet into the Black Sea without first getting permission from Turkey. So there are a lot of that overall. That is one that can, that one is ready to blow right now. And that's one that the war hawks really want to spark, because then that will, as soon as that one goes over, there won't be one troop that leaves Syria. They'll actually be sending more in, as a matter of fact. Then you have, also the Venezuela, Central and South America entanglement. And then now, of course, you have the Korean Peninsula, you have Taiwan, the South Sea of China. All of these things are strategically all kegs of black dynamite, black powder with a cigar smoker just puffing away and throwing the lit cigar in the room. It's just a matter before it goes bang, which is the reason why I have a headache. I don't smoke cigars. I shouldn't have smoked that cigar with your buddy there, Keith, yesterday. Now I got a massive headache because of that stuff. So, yeah, all of this entanglement is very, 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 very deep. And I think a lot is going to come to fruition. I'm going to just say this about Trump. I don't anticipate him being the president at the end of this year. I actually see him actually resigning at some point in some time. Boy, then you're going to get Pence. And,
I can see that too, Dave. I can see that too. Because I think he ran for president on a whim. I think Bill Clinton, when they was on that Lolita Express about to go to Jeffrey Epstein's island, that Bill said, hey, Donald, you know what you ought to do? You ought to run for president. Oh, don't worry about Hillary. She going to run on a Democratic ticket. But I think you should run for, you know, the Republican nomination and what have you. And again, that ties into the Clinton campaign's Piper strategy. Oh yeah, let's put this buffoon out here who's gonna be tall. It's gonna be a cakewalk for Hillary. But what they could not predict is that they should have been able to predict it. But Hillary is universally hated by people of whatever party label or however they identify. Them Clintons is hated, man. They really, really are. So I think Trump would resign if he's allowed to resign after his first term and be like, F it, I don't need this. You know what I'm saying? I'll go back to doing what I was doing before, get me a new TV show, build a couple of golf courses and hotels, and collect my lifetime pension of $200,000 a year with Secret Service detail for the rest of my life. It'd be easy to walk away.
We got to remember, though, that he still lost the popular vote by 3 million. But whether that's the case or not.
Popular vote don't mean nothing. And popular vote, Keith, means nothing. Popular vote means nothing when you have electoral college. So people keep saying that. Well, you know, the fact is that California, where Hillary got those 3 million, because that's the largest state, that's the only, you know, California doesn't have 3 million electoral college votes. She got all of California's electoral college votes, but guess what? She didn't win enough in the other states. That's why. So I don't know why people keep talking about the popular vote. They haven't had a popular vote since the early 1800s, where that mattered.
Well, there's only been two occasions in which the popular vote was overturned by the electoral vote. And those were both under extremely auspicious circumstances. But the other thing
about Gore Bush.
Well, one was Gore Bush. The other one was actually after Reconstruction. Mm-hmm. And if you go into that the deal that was made between the North and the South, and them pulling those troops out of the South, thereby allowing the South to do what they continued to do with the black slavery and all of that. That was the other time. But the other thing that I was talking about, they were talking and they were saying that Bush is already starting trying to negotiate a deal in which he would step down.
You mean Trump?
Trump. For him, if he can get immunity for him and his family. My thing is, I'd be a hot mojo if they took that deal. I would be, because those jokers need
to be punished. I got a feeling you would be, Chief.
They need to be punished.
Yeah, just like Hillary Clinton need to be punished for violating U.S. law and calling for the assassination of a head of state. And look at Libya now. So there's a lot of criminals who should be in prison that don't go to prison because they get immunity when they join the President's Club or they get that high up in government.
My thing is this, though. My thing is, if you look at what Trump is doing, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about early in the conversation, all the stuff that we don't know. And the reason why I brought up that article about it looks like that Russia has hired Trump to destroy, if you look at what Trump is doing, he is literally doing the scorched earth policy of this country. You know, if you look at what he's done with the water, the land, the animals, the parks, we can just go on and on and on with this.
Hey, like Keith, you got... I'm sorry, Keith. I was just letting y'all know there's another caller on board. But Keith, I say to you, those things that he's doing now, like putting a lobbyist over the EPA, putting a lobbyist over the Bureau of Land Management, these are things conservatives have long been trying to do for decades. It's not like he just came out of nowhere with this plan. He going along with what Republicans have always wanted to do with privatizing everything.
But that could be true. But the fact of the matter was what they've always wanted to do and what he's done are two different things. Look, if I join the Ku Klux Klan and I go on a massive raid and I wipe out $10,000, who cares the fact that the Ku Klux Klan been wanting to do that forever and a day? The fact of the matter is, I'm the one that did it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that don't mean Russia got anything to do with it. The Republicans have been trying to do these things. How is Putin directing him to do these things to destroy this country? This country been doing things to destroy itself. It's been on a path of self-destruction for at least 150 years or more. But you got a call from 803.
Let's take this caller real quick. Caller, welcome to Tando Radio Show. We'll come back to you, Chief. Welcome to Tando Radio Show. What say you?
It's always good to hear the voice of a friend, my brother. Great show as usual.
Brother Davis, what say you? Go ahead. We know you're on the road, so let me get to you. Go ahead, bro.
Yeah, well, first I want to give a shout-out. My lovely wife and I are definitely going to return January 16th on that Wednesday in reference to catching you up on what we've been doing, as well as being able to help inform those who are going to consider taking this here path. We're going to call Scotty. We're going to call you probably tomorrow or Wednesday in reference so that we can get on our Black Talk Media, the room in the back, so that we can post some pictures. Black Talk Radio, so we can post some pictures. So we can post some pictures as well as some video. The reason why we're doing this is because we want people to see that literally this requires something of them, but the rewards are great, one. And two, once you would be able to achieve this, it becomes generational. So that's another thing. Always keep in the back of your mind. This is going far beyond just you and the present circumstance. As well as, I wanted them to get a concept of the view of a woman and how this has actually changed our circumstance. So, literally, we're looking forward to doing that January 16th. We'll be returning for Wise Wednesday. In reference to what's going on in the show today, it's a great show. I think that the content is more valuable at this particular time. I do want to say, though, the Clintons got a big gorilla on their back because they're under investigation now by two organizations that represent the world community. And I think that has to do with their connections in Haiti and how they ripped Haiti off definitely looking forward to our return to the show.
Brother Davis, Sister Davis, much respect. A couple of callers asked, hey, when the Davis is coming back? And I said, I think it's bound to be around the 16th. Oh, I'm glad I got it. All right, because Brother Davis, Sister Davis gave me a heads up and when they were talking. But everyone is really looking forward to that.
Hey, Dave, if I may say something relevant to what the Davises was talking about. Look, I'm overhauling Black Talk Radio Network's platform right now. Going to make some changes. Thankfully, due to a few people who listen to the program, talking less than 300 people, you know who you are, who during this 10 years have sustained Black Talk Radio. And although I wasn't able to fulfill my vision because we never got that level of financial support of building these media centers in different neighborhoods and what have you, we still have been a very influential platform. That people all over the world have come to get information. So I'm going to do something different because they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. I tried the capitalist model where people pay for a service and they get that service, whether that's the digital radio station, whether that's the podcast hosting and what have you. Then they said we needed a social media community. I built btrcommunity.com. The level of support and membership is still not where it should be based on the amount of people that listen to the program. So I'm doing something different. What I'm doing is I'm redoing the way that we display video and podcasts on Black Talk Radio Network. It's going to cost me, you know, a little extra money, but I think it may be worth it. It's going to make it more modernized and what have you. But anyway, what I'm going to do is Black Talk Radio Network is going to be free to every member of Black Talk Media Project, meaning, you know, like how NPR or PBS consider you a member when you are annual, you know, contributor or donor or whatnot. So we're gonna keep it at $24 a year, just like the social media community. But instead of it just giving you access to the social media community, all the podcast hosting, video hosting, all of that will be free on the network to those members. So that's $24 a year. You will also be able to monetize your content, whether you got a Google AdSense account, you belong to some other outside ad network where they give you code to paste, whether you want to sell your own sponsorships or whatnot on your content, you'll be able to do that. And the revenue is 100% yours. It will generate reports that you can give to your sponsors about how many people saw their ads. They can post image ads, video ads, or post in that code that will display ads from whatever outside network they belong to. So those are some of the changes that I'm doing in 2019. It's just going to be open to everybody. In the past, I have, because my name, and I'm detangling my name from Black Talk Radio, if you noticed on my Twitter profile, it's no longer Black Talk Radio's Twitter profile, but it's Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed's Twitter profile, because I'm the only one who posts stuff to it and what have you. But, you know, for $24 a year, if you want to become a podcaster, you'll be able to do podcasting, video or audio. If you just want to write and publish articles, you'll be able to do that. And you will have access to the social media community. So, you know, all of that will be for $24 a year. If we don't get the level of support that we should get based off of who's listening and consuming and visiting the website, because all that costs money, traffic costs money, then at the end of this year, if we don't reach our goals, and I want to at least be bringing in $60,000 a year. That ain't nothing compared to what these other outlets are getting. They're getting millions. Right. So if I can't drum up that support by giving away all this stuff, then Black Talk Radio will be buried and it'll be dead. So that's what's coming up.
Yeah. You know, Scott, and I would I know you thought about it. I would definitely say a subscription based part of it would be, you know, but you would have to think that out because of
I'm gonna ask the donors again. We got just under 300. Should the content be made public for anybody who wants to consume it, or should it be you have to have a subscription to listen to anything on Black Talk Radio? Now, the other option is that, like what I was going to do, I was going to make like my live show. When I do my live show, when I post it, only subscribers are going to be able to know when there's a live show coming on, and you know, be able to call in or whatnot. I might make the podcast public, but then I might make it, because everybody, including newspapers, are going behind the paywall. And so, you know, I would love to keep everything free, but it's not enough people supporting our nonprofit, and you know, bills got to be paid. And so I got to do something different.
Yeah, I would say, Scotty, I'm really for subscription basis exclusively for the content. Because,
well, as a donor, Dave, you will have a vote. Anybody who's given any kind of money, any amount to Black Talk Media Project over the year, you'll have a vote on some of the directions that we take.
Yeah, because I think it's, you know, it's a lot of information, and it's, and people are able to monetize the information for their benefit, and it really needs to be shared, because I know I get something from Chief, I get something from Brother Davis, I get something from Scotty, I get something from Rob, I get something from here, and where I get something, I definitely want to see something as well. So I just think that that's very, very, very important, because you know if it's, because one thing I've learned in business, and I know this is different than everything else, you know, and I'm just saying this, one of the things that I've learned is that you can never devalue the value that you bring. And this radio network is valuable because of the content that it brings. And under a subscription base, we would bring even more content. I know I would. I really would, and I really would like to do that, because I want to see that it is actually going to, because I'm going to tell you something, people have a different attention span when they pay for something. They really do. They really, really do, because they're giving up something of value, and they want to make sure that they're getting something in return from that. So that's just, in my vote, that's what my vote is going to be. So, all right, let's go to our commercial break, then we'll come back real quickly. Listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. What I want to do, I'm gonna have this segment also go into tomorrow's show. And very important, there's an article I posted on Friday. The Fed chair says no concern about U.S. banks' health amidst market turmoil. And this was an OANN article. So, Financial Friday, I want to take that, and then tomorrow's show, I want to take a look at Venezuela in a much different way, and it's a real, real way that I think is critical. So, Keith, you see this article where the Fed chair says there's no concerned about U.S. bank health amidst market turmoil. There was a Fed chair, an FDIC chair. And let me just say something. I just want to just say this. IRS and FDIC and the Federal Reserve, they're all really private corporations. The IRS is really a part of the Federal Reserve, not a part of the government. FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance. What does the C stand for? Insurance, Federal Deposit Insurance. What does the C stand for? Corporation. It's a private entity. See, the private entity is in the private banks. So what does that mean?
Say that again, the private entity.
The private entity is in a private bank.
It is in a public bank.
The private entity private bank. I'm sorry, did I say that wrong?
The public entity owns the public bank.
No, the private entity, the FDIC is a private entity, is in the private bank. And you have to understand that. What do I mean by that? The FDIC, the Federal Reserve, are all private entities, as well as the IRS. They're all private. So, significant of that. They never have to tell you what they're really doing or what they're supposed to be doing. There is no real mandated obligation by the government for them to disclose anything because it's privatized. It's all privatized.
See, is it privatized?
It's privatized.
The reason why I'm struggling with what you're saying, mm-hmm. not disputing it.
No, I got you.
I'm struggling with what you're saying because, like, for instance, the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think of that as privatized.
Mm-hmm.
It's owned. The people that own it is the IRS.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think of privatizing so much more like what they're trying to do with the post office right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the post office is a government entity, but they're trying to sell it basically to mm-hmm. a private entity to mm-hmm. carry on.
Mm-hmm. So they're going to change that to be privatized. Here's the major difference. The overall audits and the overall accountability is different from a public and private sector.
Absolutely.
A private sector, you know, Scotty talked about the Clintons and talked about Trump not having, we don't know what his business deal, because all of that is private. It's none of your business. Well, the Federal Reserve also can tell you it's none of your business.
Right. That's why they have no say when they raise interest rates or anything else. They don't answer to nobody.
To anyone. And if Ron Paul and others have asked, who are the owners? And you know what all of the Fed chairmen have said, from Yellen to Powell, if they ask him that, Powell, Yellen, Bernanke, or Greenspan, or Volcker,
you know,
that's none of your business.
You remember Ron Paul tried to get a bill during his last term in Congress to audit the Fed. Federal Reserve's never been audited.
Yep, never been audited. Ron Paul was probably of all of the there. In my opinion, there was only two congressional members that were more stout against this overall banking cabal, and it was actually, one was Ron Paul and the other was Howard Buffett, Warren Buffett's father. And Warren Buffett's father was probably the biggest of them all and the most influential because of what he did while he was in office, a Republican out of Nebraska. And Howard Buffett, Warren's father, is the reason the Buffett family are billionaires. Not because of Warren, because of his dad. And what his dad tried to do while in office was probably one of the most sincere things of any public official that's ever been elected in modern times. And the bankers absolutely hated Howard Buffett. So very, very significant individual. But the banking sector, now, I'm saying this because of the FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. They don't have any cash enough for any major bank in the U.S. to go under in the service with they with that little gold sticker that they put on the window. Say, oh, we'll back your FDIC insured. And everybody said, oh, okay, but they don't understand what that means. What does that mean? It means they don't have to do anything. The banking rules have changed. You don't have banking anymore. Glass-Steagall was destroyed. Clinton got rid of it. Glass-Steagall meant that you couldn't have investment banking commingled with banking. Now you can have banking. You got the Volcker Rule. And the Volcker Rule was named after Paul Volcker, one of the Fed chairmen of a private organization that became the Fed chairman for one specific reason: to get rid of the Hunt brothers, Muammar Gaddafi, Marcos in the Philippines, and a crown prince of Saudi Arabia that wanted to change the economic system of the world. And they realized that how you do it is that you needed to do what? Take control of silver, the physical price of silver. And that's when the private banker said, Paul, get them. And then that's when Volcker became. Yes, Brother Davis, yes.
Let's be frank. These people have been stealing from Americans ever since 16, when the Federal Reserve was a conglomerate of very, very rich bankers who literally leveraged Andrew Jackson's presidency to pass the Federal Reserve Act while the whole Congress and Senate was on a Christmas break. And ever since, they have been filtering money into special interest groups that serve their purpose. And the sad part about this is that when the voices should have spoke up at the time, they did not. They engineered each one of the financial, setbacks, meaning the Great Depression, the one that we went through in 2008, the one that's about to come. These people engineered all of that, because the basic philosophy of the principle was said by the Rothschilds years ago. I care not who runs the country as long as I can control the money. And that's exactly what you see to this day. I just wanted to add that part there, brother.
Yeah, it's the famous Rothschild speech. I care not who makes the laws if I control the money supply. Yeah.
Hey, Brother speaking
Davis,
of
right. Brother Davis was right when he said, "Let's just be frank here, Dave." Yeah.
Speaking of speeches,
that was very, very true in 1913 at Jekyll Island, where they were able to create the overall Federal Reserve and get it to be in a position of standing and to be able to take the overall taxpayers' labor for their spoil. And it wasn't just done there, it's been done historically throughout.
Dave
said Andrew Jackson was actually fighting against them as well. And throughout, you know, history, you'll hear about the overall move to ensure that the bankers don't take over, because if they do, that would be it. It's actually in the Constitutional Convention itself was really controlled by the overall bankers, the European bankers, and subjugating the rest of the new country known as the United States. And they won. They got it done.
Hey,
they
Dave.
Also, yes.
I mean, talking about speeches, and you brought up the Clintons. The Clintons are so entangled with these bankers. Let's not even get to the details of why Russian bankers paid Bill Clinton a $500,000 to speak. But How come we still don't know? Remember when Senator Sanders was asking Hillary Clinton to make her speech on Wall Street to the bankers public, where she had made everybody who attended sign a non-disclosure agreement. I forget how much she got paid. It might have been $500,000. I mean, our memories are just short when it comes to these cult personalities. I still want to know, what did she tell them bankers?
Yeah, Scotty. Yeah, I remember that. And see, because it's privatized, they don't have to tell you anything. But guess who was... Guess when they met for lunch, guess who was on the lunch table to be served? The people. Because you weren't invited to the dinner table, so guess what? You're on the menu. They're serving you. This guy's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And this stuff goes back to even, you know, like I was saying, when... You know, from Woodrow Wilson during the overall banking heist, where they actually gave federal influence to the overall private bankers, which is actually illegal. Supposed to have been illegal, and what, you know, has been fought for many, many times to keep out. And this history of this overall banking revolt that needed to been happening has been going on for a very long time. You know, in Lincoln's administration, there was a big push by Salmon P. Chase, who later on the bankers loved so much because he was the first one that really that helped revolutionize getting a debt instrument to the private people by way of greenbacks. They loved him so much they named a bank after him, known as Chase Bank. So it's really, really significant what was done. So, and man, time flies. But, and we're going to touch on this because it's really important, but there was an article, and it says a top U.S. bank regulator said on Thursday she has no concerns about the volatility in the equity and futures markets posed a threat to the banking system, telling Reuters the country's lead lenders have plenty of capital to weather further market swing. Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, commonly referred to as FDIC, McWilliams also told Reuters that banking regulators have begun a review of the so-called CAMELS rating system used to assess the health of the nation's bank. See, the thing about the nation's bank makes people think one thing, that those banks are the U.S. citizens' actual access to banking. No, it's not. That's just banks, the private banks in the nation. And the thing about it is that they're always going to exploit the overall liabilities to give it to the general population while they're going to privatize all of the profits. They're going to privatize all of the profits. So it's really always a continuous heist. The bank bailout of 2008 was robbery. Hank Paulson engaged in the overall robbery of the U.S. The general population robbed them completely. And they did it under the guises of, if you don't give us what we want, we'll have martial law tomorrow. Why is the overall institution of the stability, economic stability of the nation tied into a private organization when the people are actually giving their overall taxpayers' revenue for it? You better move it to where it's you. Your overall financial sovereignty needs to be independent and privatized by you.
Let me answer that question right quick, Dave. This is my educated guess, is the United States government no longer presides over a republic, but is a corporation.
Yes. Can't be better said, Scotty. That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And this is why Texas, the Republic of Texas, votes to stay in. So,
But we got to get ready, get out of here. We're going to pick this up. Keith just woke up, so he wanted to say goodbye. That's what he just did in that. So much love, much respect. It's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.